Bringing in a theme this evening for reflection and for practice in direct experience. That is a deep dive. Okay. And it fits in with a flow of themes that I've offered the last few times that I've been able to join you all in community and practice. And so when I was with you all in November of last year, we explored this theme of suchness. And the theme of suchness is a way that the heart and mind shine forth with a deep understanding of conditions as they are. And the heart is right there with it. Suchness. So the recording of that talk is on the Marin Sangha website if you want to revisit or that evokes your curiosity, because that's not the terrain we're traveling on this evening. And then the time before that, I was at Marin Sangha. We did the theme of emptiness and specifically the filling up and emptying out of our sense of self and how to practice with that. And so these two themes in direct experience and in practice, I think of them as like two sides of the same coin. But then there's a third theme, and that's for this evening. And the third theme kind of dissolves the entire coin. And that theme in the Pali is called Atamayata. And what Atamayata points to needs many different English words to kind of point to it, to tease it out. So I'll call in some of these words and you see which word kind of lights you up, sparks your curiosity, or sounds familiar with something that you are curious about, are familiar with, etc. So, atamayata, unfashioning, unfabricated. Here's a wonderful English word, unconcoctability. But my two favorite definitions of atamayata in English are a little different. Not there with the object. There with the knowing. And so, what all these English words that we don't usually use are pointing to is the direct experience of the non-dual, atamayata. So, these teachings that I'm sharing with you over the course of my visits to Marin Sangha recently all come out of the Thai forest tradition. Which is the key lineage that I carry and teach in. And all three of them together make up a list that is a lot less known. And the list is called the three subtle characteristics. If we've been around the Dharma a while, we're probably familiar with the three characteristics of existence, which are impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and not self. Not personal. Well, it would be a whole nother talk to lay out the relationality between those three and the three subtle characteristics, but just to say they have a direct relationship. And so we have emptiness, suchness, and the non-dual, atamayata. So tonight's the deep dive, and that's actually wonderful timing for me because an hour before we gathered, I finished teaching a weekend retreat, a real deep dive, long weekend retreat on all of these topics with a group of students that are committed in training in the Thai forest lineage that I teach. So I'm swimming in the waters. And so I remember when I was with you all in November, and I said at the end of that talk, okay, next time we'll do the Bahia Sutta. And a few of you said, yay, I love the Bahia Sutta. So that's going to be our finger pointing into the moon of this direct experience of the non-dual. And then the day long that Mary Kelly referenced on May 3rd, with that day long, the topic is something akin to taking the one seat, the practices of choiceless awareness and pure awareness. And so we'll take all these themes that we've explored in bite-sized pieces on Sunday nights and go further with them and see what is revealed. So I really look forward to doing that on May 3rd with whomever is available to participate. So let's see here. I'll give you one more definition of Atamayata. It's one that for some people is more accessible, but this is not a very accessible theme. It's not a theme that I usually teach at a weekly sangha. Only for a group like us where there's a lot of experience, and I've known you all for many, many years. Those of you that have been around for many, many years. So, Atamayata. The mind's energy does not go out to the object and occupy it. The mind's energy does not go out to the object and occupy it. The lines that get drawn in our direct experience from me to the object of sound, or me to the object of thought, me to the object of sensation, that energy does not flow out and occupy and create that world of subject-object duality. And that's why it's the non-dual. Now, here's the good news. The good news is all of these teachings in their direct experience run on a continuum. They run on a spectrum. So you might be thinking, how am I going to have a direct experience of this or practice with this? Maybe the Bahia Sutta will help for those of you that know that one. But also this continuum model. And so Atamayata is a theme. I'm not going to water it down. In the deepest areas of direct experience, this direct experience is at the threshold of falling kind of over the edge into cessation or nibbana. Okay, that's the far end of the continuum. Here's the ordinary end of the continuum. I call it in the spirit of it. Oh, in the spirit of just doing the dishes. And in the spirit of just doing the dishes, if there's an Atamayata theme, it just means that I do not need to be caught up in me doing them in the spirit of it. Okay, so now I'm going to share a story of the teaching of the Buddha to Bahia. And then when we get to the teaching that was offered, we'll practice with it for a short period, and then we'll find out how the story ends, and then I'll give a few tips that you can play with as you like in your future practice. So the story that I'm about to share comes from the writings of Ajahn Pasno and Ajahn Amaro, who some of us know as the original founding abbots of Abayagiri Monastery up in Mendocino, California. And some of you may remember, I have a long-term relationship with both of them, a couple decades with both of them, and have had the opportunity to teach with them in highly unusual situations, as well as receive teachings, practiced with them, and Ajahn Amaro was my main mentor in senior teacher training with Jack and Joseph. So, as I'm going to share their version of the story, the invitation is to feel into the context of this situation, this moment in which this teaching happened between the Buddha and Bahia, so that we can feel into it. Context matters. We can feel into the themes. Once upon a time, according to the suttas, Bahia was a well-respected religious teacher who lived in northern India, somewhere on the seacoast. He was an ascetic of some spiritual accomplishment, and he assumed that he was a fully enlightened being. One night, a deva, unseen benevolent forces, not asking you to believe in anything, just open to the possibility that there might be more benevolence in this world than meets the eye. One night, a deva, who had been a relative of Bahia's in a former life, came to Bahia and informed him that, "No, you are not an arhat, and you are not on the way to becoming one either." Oh, can you imagine? You have some penetrating insight. You go, "Wow, this practice really works." And then somebody comes by who like knows more than us or has practiced more than us, and they go, "Forget it. You're back in preschool." Oh, we've all gone through that. We'll go through it again. So Bahia, in this situation, was disturbed by this announcement, and then asked, "Well, are there any genuine awakened beings in the world?" And he was told, "Yes, indeed." And the deva described both the Buddha and where the Buddha was residing at that time. Bahia is said to have started the walk of several hundred miles then and there. That's ardency. That's ardency in action. Now, what we're willing to do to receive the support that's needed to keep waking up. Ardency. Some days later, having reached the district capital of Savasti, he encountered the Buddha and a group of his monks as they walked on their morning alms round through the narrow, dusty streets of the town. Okay, so who here has been to India? Yep, call it up. The dusty streets of the town, the narrow, with all this different forms of traffic and animals and humans all in motion together. And if you haven't been to India, maybe you have been somewhere that it is like that. And so we're being called into an environment that this teaching of awakening was offered in. It didn't happen in super comfortable circumstances. And so Bahia strode right up to the Buddha and bowed down before him, stopping the Buddha in his tracks, and asked to receive teachings on the Dhamma. So it's a poignant moment. The Buddha is on alms round with his whole monastic community, and somebody he doesn't know in the middle of the busy streets strides up to him, bows down, and says, "Teach me." So what happens? The Buddha's on alms round. If we know anything about the Vinaya, the monastic code, we know that there's a timeline on that main meal. And if you don't meet that timeline, you don't eat that day. It reminds me of when I used to teach family retreat at Spirit Rock with Ajahn Amaro and Ajahn Pasano. And we'd be in the middle of it with the families and the kids. And then suddenly we'd realize we have to go offer Ajahn his food or he's not going to be able to eat. But we're running late because, you know, it's kids and they don't really follow relative time very well. So we're hurrying to offer the food in time. You know, the Ajahns were always so relaxed about it. And I'm sure the Buddha was too. And yet what happened next was interesting. So the Ajahns continue. The Buddha pointed out, "This is not a convenient time for me to teach you, Bhaiya. We are in the middle of collecting alms." And also, all around them was the surge and the bustle of an Indian market town at the start of the day. Just the conditions weren't ideal. The way they so often aren't, right at a threshold of something new opening up that we could have never imagined, we could have never controlled into being. What happened next? Bahia was undeterred and responded by saying, "Venerable Sir, life is a very uncertain thing. It is unknown when either you or I might die. Please, therefore, teach me the Dhamma here and now." It's a potent truth. We don't know. And there's certain times where our spiritual intuition says, don't wait. Don't wait for better conditions. Don't wait for better practice. Don't wait for a better teacher. Although, of course, here he probably, we could say he had a very good teacher. That urgency that sometimes arises through us. And then it's kind of this open question of where does the courage come forward to take the risk? And where do we also respect relative conditions simultaneously? And so the Ajahns continue, as often occurs in the Buddhist suttas, this exchange between Bahia and the Buddha was repeated, not once, not twice, but three times. Finally, both because the Buddha could see the truth of Bahia's assertion, parentheses, the Ajahn say, he himself regularly used the fact of such uncertainty in encouraging a sense of ardency in his students. Okay, so that's interesting. The very thing that the teacher uses to encourage the students is now being used to encourage him to free a heart and mind. And because when pressed up to the third time on any question, a Buddha has to respond, the Buddha then relented and offered Bahia this brief but pithy teaching. And so I'll share this teaching that was offered to Bahia, read it through. And as I read it through, if it's new to you, don't try to wrap your conceptual mind around it. It's more like open to the wider space of the mystery that's beyond the mind that based its okayness on knowing the answers. There's a bigger space, no? And just let one piece of it touch you, and don't try to follow along and remember all of it, because that's not what's being pointed to. And then if you are familiar with it, just rest in the field of it, let it be the teacher, and see if there's one line in it that just kind of plucks the heartstrings a little or opens the practice a little right now. Bahia, in the seen, there's only the seen. In the heard, there's only the heard. In the sensed, there's only the sensed. In the cognized, there is only the cognized. This Bahia is how you should train yourself. When Bahia, there is for you in the seen only the seen, in the heard only the heard, in the sensed only the sensed, and in the cognized only the cognized, then Bahia. There is no you in connection with that. When Bahia, there is no you in connection with that. There's no you there. And when Bahia, there is no you there. Then Bahia, you are neither here nor there, nor in between the two. This, just this, is the end of suffering. So let's play with this a little bit in direct experience. The first invitation is an eyes open form of practice. And so the eyes are open, and the visual field is as it is. It's taking care of itself. But could we soften the gaze of the eyes a little bit? Could we invite all the muscles around the eyes to relax, soften? For some people, it's a sense of inviting the eyeballs to drop back into their sockets and rest. So that it's not about me looking at something and needing to identify it to be okay. It's just seeing. Ajahn Suchito describes it like gazing gently over the ocean. An empty, vast ocean. Just seeing. And it's gonna be small moments many times because inevitably the seeing starts seeing something and the line is drawn, me and that object of sight, and we start creating a world. small moments many times. Just see. Just relax the gaze again. Or close the eyes for a moment. Just take a pause. Try it again. Okay, so that one for some people is really evocative and for some people is very difficult. That's okay. There's another invitation. In the herd, there's only the herd. So if you're used to meditating eyes closed, feel free to close your eyes. In the hearing, just the hearing. So just being open to the field of sound within the body, in the room we're in, outside. So this field of arising and passing sounds, being known. That's the choiceless awareness practice. Just check it out. Field of arising and passing sounds, being known. And then there might be moments within that where what is being known, in terms of what sound is being known, it just empties out in a moment. And it's simply hearing. And it's not about what is heard, labeling what is heard, how I'm relating to what is heard, just hearing. It's like this energetic receptivity moving out from the ears into space. You rest in that receptivity. Just hearing. Then we have just sensing. It's a world of bodily sensations. Cue into them. The way they are moving and changing and flowing and vibrating and being themselves just as they are. And noticing the pendulation that can happen between a whole sense of body, a whole sense of my body or my knee, and then other times that experience of I and mine starts to dissolve. It's just sensing without needing to identify it as knee or arm or me or mine, just sensing. It's so alive. Mm-hmm. I can experience in moments, small moments, many times, that there doesn't need to be a you there in order to have this embodied human experience. It's still okay. And there's the cognized, only the cognized. Just keep it simple and play with that as just thinking without needing to get so caught up in me and the storyline. This vast experience of mind and heart, and there's all this movement of thoughts. Puzzling over what I'm saying, trying to figure it out, thinking about what's tomorrow, the kind of meditation coach thinking, all kinds of thinking. Sometimes it'll feel very, very me and mine happening here, solid and separate. But other times there'll be the end of that complexity, a pause in the struggle or the dukkha of it, where it's just thinking, just as it is, and it's just okay. Nothing to get rid of. But not caught up in it either. So when Bahia, there's no you there, then Bahia, you are neither here nor there, nor in between the two. This, just this, is the end of suffering. So sometimes people ask me, just this is the end of suffering? This the only way? No. It's a poetic phrase. So what happened next? What happened next is that Bahia realized full enlightenment, even as he heard the few words of this teaching. Kneeling in the dust and the clamor of Savatthi that morning. And furthermore, true to his own sense of the fragile nature of existence, moments later, he was impaled by a runaway cow with calf and breathed his last. We don't know. Then you think to yourself, ah, oh, it's a Sunday night. I've had a long weekend. I'm not Bahia. I can't practice with that. We don't know what's going to happen next. So, in the spirit of it counts. And so the story concludes. It was customary of the Buddha to honor those of his disciples who excelled. In particular ways. For example, Sariputra was declared by the Buddha to be the keenest in wisdom, and Dhammadina as the nun most skilled in expounding on the Dhamma. So to Bahia, the Buddha posthumously accorded the honor of being the one to gain the swiftest full understanding of his teaching. The end. And that creates no pressure for us as well. Here's somebody who was honored for getting it the fastest. So when we don't get it all the way at the end of the continuum right away, there's nothing wrong. So a few tips from the road of my own practice, working with these teachings. So working with the sense doors. My recommendation is to choose one sense door at a time to play around with this teaching. Now, as a truly advanced practice, all the sense doors come together with that expression. But starting where we can develop a relationship, choose one sense door that feels a little bit more accessible to soften with experience a little bit. Interestingly, now that I think about it, the day long we're doing in May, taking the one seat, is an opportunity to move from choiceless awareness, which is a mindfulness practice, into what I call pure awareness or Mahasati, which is where that which knows all this sense door contact shines into the foreground. And at that point, all sense door contact is included. So that will be something that you can come join and learn about practicing with to be able to expand into all sense doors with this style of Bahia practice. We do tend to have stronger and weaker sense doors for clear seeing. For me, the visual field has always been an indicator for kind of where the practice is at when I'm practicing. And I could say a lot more about that, but because of lack of time, I'll just leave it at that. For some people, it's sound. It just really opens up through practice a clarity that perhaps sight doesn't, or it's the sensation world of the body. So if you know you have a sense door that there's more accessible clear seeing or presence, use that. It's kind of like the Brahmavihara practices, where some of us, it's just our go-to is metta practice, or our go-to is compassion practice, or it's like that. This theme of filling up and emptying out can be really useful with Bahia style practice. So, filling up and emptying out of the sense of self, but also filling up and emptying out of the experience of an object at the sense door. It's like, oh, it emptied out and now it's just hearing. Oh, it filled up and now I'm hearing the dog barking. Oh, it emptied out, it's just hearing again. That pendulation back and forth is gold because then we're not struggling with experience or negating experience. We're just opening wider to the way experience is usually conditioned. I definitely encourage you to work within the spirit of this teaching in any posture. And my root teacher, Ajahn Jimnyan, very much encouraged the standing posture and the walking posture for these types of practices. So I have somebody that I'm working with long term who, when they take their daily walk, they do Bahia practice, just seeing, just hearing. They do it in the spirit of it. And sometimes it goes deeper. It's another way to practice. And so, this whole thing on the continuum of atta-mayata, of what I'm calling in the spirit of it, We could choose one activity to do each day, doing the dishes, just doing the dishes, taking a shower, just taking a shower. Just do something simple and embodied. Ajahn Amaro loves to teach about this Pali word, nipapancha. And nipapancha points to being free from complications. You might recognize the Pali word papancha, which means making a mountain out of a molehill in our minds. Nipapancha, free from complication. Just doing the thing is how we would say it in modern language. Just doing the thing. So those are a few tips for the road. A closing quote from Ajahn Amaro. Don't complicate the uncomplicated. Learn to recognize the stress of complication, the tension of complication, and learn to recognize we don't have to do that. Just let go. Right here in this moment, the heart is free, and there's an openness to that presence.